But I think that's one reason why when we go through life, we set goals, we make plans, we take action, and we have positive expectation, absolutely, but we make sure we're not emotionally attached to the results or any one result in particular.
This is Superfast Business with James Schranko. Helping you build your business super fast.
James Schranko here. Welcome back to superfastbusiness.com. Today we are speaking with an author who co-authored a very famous book. Actually, it's had more than 500,000 copies sold now. It's been translated into multiple languages. It's an international and national bestseller. I'd like to welcome Bob Berg to the call.
Hey, James. Great to be with you.
Well, it's great to be with you, Bob. And firstly, I want to say thank you for creating an amazing book that had a significant impact on my own life and no doubt the lives of many others.
Well, I appreciate that. That means a lot to me.
Now, what we will do is, I think there's a great explainer video that explains what the premise and the short story of The Go-Giver, and we'll embed that in our post, which you've kindly given us. It's a great way to explain it. And you'll be offering a free chapter at thegogiver.com, which is a tremendously giving thing to do and very appropriate to your topic. Now, there's a few different principles that are covered in the book. Firstly, it's a very short read. Was that deliberate?
Yeah. I mean, I think short stories tend to be more enjoyed these days. You know, people are busy. And I think that when you can, just like a speech, right? Nobody ever gets mad because your speech was too short. It's a but because it's too long, they might be. And I think it's the same with the book. And I was very honored to be able to work with John David Mann on this. He was really the lead writer and storyteller. And he has a great way of really writing a story so it's short, it's succinct, and really makes the point.
Yeah, so I remember reading the book when it first came out, and it was such a profound book because of a couple of points in there that they weren't actually some of the laws, but they were the metaphor for illustrating the law. And I still use these ideas to this day, especially in my own coaching. I'd love to point out what they are for you and for our listeners, but one of the fantastic ones relates to the fire, and it perfectly describes the way that most people approach their own business as they step out from having a job to being an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. A lot of them are talking about the fire in the way that, you know, just won't work. I'd love it if you could, if you know what I'm talking about, if you could maybe share that story of the log and the fire, because I think that was such a profound metaphor.
Well, thank you. It's basically just that a lot of times people approach giving and receiving in terms of saying to the fireplace, first you give me some heat, then I'll throw on a log and light a match and some newspaper and so forth. Or, you know, it's like going to the bank and say, first you give me some money, then I'll make a deposit. Well, life doesn't work that way. First, we need to sow before we reap. You know, that's an age-old principle, of course, but people often don't look at it that way. And as you said, and you make a great point, often when going from a job to becoming an entrepreneur, there's a different mindset at heart, right? Because you know when you work for someone else, you're going to do your work, you're going to get your pay, and there's a guarantee, exactly.
Well, it's guaranteed almost. The employees, they've got a guaranteed profit as long as they have that job. And of course, it's extremely dangerous because they're single source dependent on one income.
Well, exactly.
And much like, you know, entrepreneurs, so much like the fire metaphor, I liked it so much because, you know, I recently went to New Zealand with a friend of mine. We had a little business surfing mastermind, and we stayed in a cabin that had a log fire, and it's freezing cold, and we had to light a fire every night to stay warm. And he didn't know how to light a fire. He's never been taught. Mm-hmm. And I was explaining to him how to light the fire. And often he would whack a very big log on there without some fire starter or kindling. And, you know, he wouldn't build it up. He'd expect a very big harvest for very minimal input.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. That's a great story.
The other one that I liked that explains it, principle of receiving and reciprocity, is the breathing out, exhale metaphor. I just, that one triggered something for me. It made everything make sense. And just for some context, I grew up in a household where my mum has always been a massive giver, but in almost in a martyrdom sense, she's devoted her life to charities and to other people, everyone else, almost to the extent where everyone was always first. She's she certainly looked after the family very well, but she's always worked for charities and organizations, and she's still doing this right now, even as a volunteer. She works for other organizations that help people. And I think this really helped me was the exhale metaphor for explaining why it's okay to receive as well. In fact, you should expect it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is the law of receptivity. And the law of receptivity says the key to effective giving is to stay open to receiving. And as you pointed out in the story near the end, the main mentor, Pindar, asked Joe, the protege, to breathe out and hold that outgoing breath for 30 seconds, which is a lot harder than it seems. And after about 10 or 11 seconds, Joe was out of breath, gasping for air. And Pindar said, "What's the matter? Joe can't do it." And Joe said, "No, I can't just breathe out. I've got to breathe in as well." And Pindar then jokingly replied, "Well, Joe, what if I was to tell you that it's been medically proven that it's actually healthier to breathe out than it is to breathe in?" And, Joe just laughed. He said, "That's impossible. You can't. You can't do one or the other. You've got to do both." Well, exactly. We breathe out and we breathe in. We breathe out, which, carbon dioxide. We breathe in oxygen. We breathe out, which is giving. We breathe in, which is receiving. And when we talk about giving, we're talking about, in this context of the go-giver, we're talking about constantly and consistently being focused on providing value to others. And that comes first. At the same time, we still need to be willing to receive in like measure, or it's all for naught. This is why John David Mann and I say that money is simply an echo of value. It's the thunder to value's lightning, which means the focus must be on the giving, like lighting the match and throwing on the log. The giving comes first, or the value comes first. The money you receive is simply a very natural and direct result of the value you've provided. So what we want to do is not look at giving and receiving as two opposite concepts. All too often, that's the message that we get from the world. You're either a giver or a receiver. But what Pindar was pointing out was that is not true. You want to be a giver and a receiver. They work in tandem. They're simply two sides of the very same coin. Now, again, the focus is on the giving. That comes first, but then you allow the receiving, and that's receptivity.
Right. Yeah, that's law number five, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I really got a lot from number one and number two as well. Well, actually all of them, but let's just briefly highlight what they are. The value versus money, I think that's an interesting concept, that we're basically, our worth is a measure of how much value we give compared to the amount we're paid. Is that right?
Yeah. And that's a law of value. And to understand this, because it sounds counterintuitive at first to say your true worth in business is based on how much more you give in value than you take in payment. Because at first it sounds like, well, wait a second, aren't I going to go broke? How do I give more in value than I take in payment and thrive in business, never mind survive in business? So for this, we simply have to understand the difference between price and value. Price is a dollar amount or a pound amount, a dollar or pound figure. It's finite. It is what it is. Value, on the other hand, is the relative worth or desirability of a thing, of something, to the end user or beholder. In other words, what is it about this thing, this product, service, concept, idea, what have you, that brings so much worth to the other person that they will willingly exchange their money for this and be very happy that they did, while you, of course, make a healthy profit, which you should. In fact, in any basically free market exchange where no one's forced to do business with one another, the major characteristic of such is that there are, in every business transaction, there are always two profits, the buyer profits and the seller profits. Because each one comes away better off after the transaction than they were before the transaction. But it's always because the value being exchanged are different. And it's in each one is desired by the other person. In other words, your prospective customer, they want your product and what comes with it, your caring, right? Your service, the entire experience. They want that more than they want the money. You want the money more than you want the product or service. That's why you're willing to sell it. So both parties come out ahead. But it's always up to the salesperson or the entrepreneur or the business owner. It's always up to them to make sure that along with the product or service itself, the customer experience that they provide is so overwhelmingly fantastic that that other person is just absolutely grateful to have done business with you.
It fits with a lot of other ways that I've heard it explained. A few examples of that. Alan Weiss talks about value-based fees, that we really have to focus on the perceived value, not on the deliverables. Jay Abraham talks about people wanting a hole, not a drill.
Exactly.
Then in spin selling, Neil Rackham talks about a sale being a process of change from one situation to a better alternative situation. People only buy to be better off. In other words, don't rip people off.
Exactly.
Don't deliver less than what they're paying for.
No, on the other hand, right, just the opposite. Give them so much more in value or use value than what they're paying for, while you, of course, again, make a very, very healthy profit. So both parties need to win in any transaction in order for it to be a successful transaction.
It's much like when I purchased the Kindle version of your book yesterday to brush up on the book itself. You know, it's a small fee, but the lessons in the book have a significant impact in life.
Thank you.
In fact, after I learned about that it's okay to receive, when people would have a compliment or tell me something nice, instead of brushing it off, I would just accept it.
Great. That's fantastic.
Well, it's a little mindset change.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I liked is that it sort of reinforces gratitude. And also, I've done some research to find out that gratitude is actually a good counter for stress.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, they say that it offsets cortisol. A friend of mine, Kerwin, was talking about this recently. So you do see that people who have more gratitude have a little less of that entitlement or that hanging feeling that they're missing out.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about this other one, number two, the law number two about compensation. This is extremely relevant to my audience because in our community here at Superfast Business, a lot of our members have memberships, coaches, and subscription programs, and they're really leveraging this compensation law, which basically talks about your income being directly related to
how many
people you can actually help.
Right.
And so a leveraged business model really takes advantage of this compensation law.
Sure. The law of compensation says your income is determined by how many people you serve, as well as how well you serve them. So where law number one says to give more in value than you take in payment, law number two tells us that the more people whose lives you touch with the exceptional value you provide, the more money with which you'll be rewarded. So, you know, you take someone who does a fantastic job, provides great value, but if they're not touching the lives of a lot of people, their income is going to be relatively low. So what they need to do, and this is where subscription marketing, of course, is just so terrific, you're able to serve a whole lot more people with the value you're providing.
Yes, and it's just such a profound and important observation. You've got to have a leverage model to deliver your value.
Mm-hmm.
I liked also, there was just a few little aside things in the book, and maybe they weren't picked up by everyone. I found it fascinating going through the highlighted notes of the Kindle. Firstly, I noticed the Kindle's vastly upgraded from the original book that I bought. It's got an introduction from Arianna Huffington. You've got testimonials from like the most powerful people on the planet, from Brian Tracy, Tom Hopkins, and everyone in the world of business books that I've immersed myself in. So it was such a great read, and it even has suggestions for, you know, book clubs and how to leverage the book. I like this little aside. It's, you get what you expect.
Yeah. And, you know, there's no magic there. You know, it sounds one of those magical things where, you know, you get what you expect. And sometimes you don't get what you expect, but generally you do. In the overall way of life, you know, when you approach people in a way that you expect good things are probably going to happen. Again, not because of anything magic, but let's look at it this way. You go into a situation And it's a, you know, a person who is, I don't know whether they're a government bureaucrat or whether it's they're a customer service person, but they're known to be difficult or whatever it happens to be. And you go in there expecting this person to be unhelpful, unkind, nasty, right? Well, they're probably going to be that way. Why? Because you've put that expectation up. And by doing so, you've changed your energy. The look on your face and the body language and everything is going to be almost daring that person to be that way. But let's say instead you decide in advance, you expect this person to be kind and helpful and fantastic and everything else. And so what you do is you go in with a feeling of gratitude. Okay. And it comes from the inside out and you have a genuine smile on your face and you appreciate that person. There's a really good chance. And I can tell you from firsthand experience and from the many people who've utilized this and have found the same thing, that this person's going to be a lot easier to deal with. So it's not that by expecting them to be a nice person or helpful that you've changed them. No, it's that you've changed yourself. And that's what changes them.
Right. And you had sort of another comment along those lines. It's that the world sort of treats you the way that you expect to be treated.
Exactly. You know, go in into a store somewhere or pass someone on the street and smile and watch what happens. A whole lot of them are going to smile back. You know, it just is often as simple as that. And I can't tell you how often just great things have happened just from smiling at someone. And again, there's nothing manipulative about it. You want to feel that way. Now, although I'm going to say this, even if you don't feel like smiling, just smile anyway. And again, nothing manipulative about this because you're authentically wanting to better yourself. You're going to train yourself. Remember, feeling does not precede action. Action precedes feeling. And so regardless of how you feel, if you know the right thing to do is touch people in a positive way, then just get that smile in your face. Greet people. Be helpful to people, even if you don't feel like it. And what's going to happen is you're going to begin to feel like it because, again, action precedes feelings. We change our body language. We change the cells. We change everything about us. And people are going to start responding to you in such a positive way. You're going to love the feeling of that. So it's a no lose.
So this is sort of bordering on law four, being your authentic self.
Well, and that's so key because the most valuable gift you have to offer is yourself. You know, Deborah Davenport, one of the characters in the book, shared a story shared a lesson she learned in her sales career that all the skills in the world, the sales skills, technical skills, people skills, as important as they all are, and they all are indeed very, very important, they're also all for naught if you don't come at it from your true authentic core. But when you do, when you show up, as we like to say, as yourself, day after day, week after week, month after month, people feel good about you. They feel safe with you. They know you. They like you. They trust you. They respect your consistency. And they're much more likely to want to be in relationship with you.
Well, then we might as well round out with number three, which is influence by serving others.
Well, this is an important one because it's where we focus. And the law of influence says your influence is determined by how abundantly you place other people's interests first. Now, again, this one sounds very counterintuitive, maybe even Pollyanna-ish if you've read that story. And yet, the greatest leaders, the top influencers, the highest money-earning salespeople, this is simply how they run their lives and conduct their businesses. They're always focused, laser focused on bringing value to others. Now, I want to just point something out and qualify this for a moment because it's very, very important. When we say place the other person's interests first, we certainly don't mean you should be anyone's doormat or a martyr or self-sacrificial in any way. It has nothing to do with that. It's simply understanding that as several of the mentors pointed out to Joe, the protege in the story, the golden rule of business, of sales, what have you, is simply that all things being equal, people will do business with and refer business to those people they know, like, and trust. And there's no faster, more powerful, or more effective way to elicit those feelings toward you from others than by, and here's the key, moving from an I focus or me focus to an other focus. Looking for ways to, as Sam, one of the mentors, told Joe, make your win all about the other person's win. And as you do this, and you do this constantly and consistently, you're going to become known for that. You're going to be developing and planting these seeds of great will with people. And you'll become that go-to person, that one that others know, like, and trust and want to do business with. And you know, you start attracting these kind of people into your life, into your sphere. And now all of a sudden, you are working with a hugely powerful, powerful network.
Yeah, I think this is almost at odds with a lot of the sporting metaphors that are going on in business, like this win-lose, crush, kill, dominate, capture. And I really like the win-win. Again, it's whether it's Jay Abraham or Alan Weiss, all these great business minds talk about how you can create more value and partner with your customer in a win-win situation.
Absolutely.
To get the value. One of the critical lessons in The Go-Giver that I think is not well executed by a lot of readers of business books is the actual implementation. And if I look back to my own trajectory in business, a lot of it came down to reading a book and really taking the time to understand the lesson and then making sure that I incorporate that straight away into my daily work life. And I've given you a couple of examples how the exhale exercise and the fire in the log exercise and the value to many exercise really compounded my views and philosophies around how I approach business. But in the book, the main character has to implement to test out the ideas straight away. How important do you think that is?
Well, it's very important. You bring up a fantastic point, and that's why we put in there that his one condition, if you will, to mentorship from Pindar was that Joe had to apply each law that day, not think about it, not wonder if it will work, but just apply it. And this is also why we say that we want people, see, a lot of people think the opposite of a go-giver is a go-getter, but that's not actually true. We want people to be go-getters because go-getters take action. And everybody who goes into business for themselves, all of your listeners, they know that you can have the best thoughts, the nicest ideas, the greatest intentions, but unless action's put into the mix, nothing's going to happen. So we want people to be go-getters. Now, the neat thing is there's no dichotomy between being a go-getter and a go-giver. Many go-getters, people of action, are also go-givers, people who are focused on bringing value to others. So the opposite of a go-giver is actually a go-taker. And that's the person who feels almost entitled, if you will, to take without having added value to the other person. So being a go-getter and taking action, just like you did after you read the book and putting in Dr. Weiss's ideas and Jay Abraham's and all the great people that you study. And, you know, these are all so important because without implementing the ideas, they're just nothing more than ideas. Once you implement them, now you have an opportunity to actually put them to use for you. So we like to say be both a go-getter and a go-giver, just don't be a go-taker.
Nice. And I must say, you know, when I reread the book last night, I still got a little chill on the back of my spine at the big reveal at the end. And I won't spoil it for our audience, but it was very, very clever storytelling.
Oh, thank you. That's the writing of John David Mann, believe me. But he's so fantastic.
So, Bob, were you surprised how big the book's become?
Well, we had an idea that this was going to go pretty big. The interesting thing was the first wave of buyers were the people who were already successful, people who were already living their lives and conducting their business as go-givers. Of course, they didn't call it that. But remember, there's nothing particularly new about any of these principles. They've all been around forever, I would imagine. They're simply success principles, life principles. So we heard from a lot of people, whether corporate CEOs, sales managers, organizational leaders, telling us this book put into words what the way first that they had built their businesses, but also what they have tried to tell others that others didn't necessarily believe. So what they did is they would buy lots of these books and give them to people in their companies or their businesses or their organizations or people they were mentoring. And then the second wave came from those people. And all of a sudden we started getting all these, you know, so we sort of had an idea that this had an audience. And we've been very grateful.
One thing I was thinking when I was reading the book is I imagine someone might be looking at the main character, Joe, and saying, well, gosh, he was lucky because the chairman, Pinder, was able to, mm-hmm. you know, just gift him these lessons out of the blue without any real effort on Joe's behalf. Do you think he was lucky? What caused him to be the recipient of these great lessons?
I don't know. I guess it was just supposed to happen for him. He took initiative.
Yeah, because he was tracking down the big fish.
Right. And so, you know, he was a go-getter. He took action. And remember, he had a person in his office who was very helpful, and who knows what he might have said to Pindar, that this kid's got some great potential, but, you know, needs some help, and you know, he'd be someone who would do great with this, or, you know, so who knows. But you know what? You'd like to think that if Joe wasn't able to get with Pindar right then, he would have met, you know, someone else, or he would have, again, created a, you know, hopefully, you know, and you never know. But I think that's one reason why when we go through life, we set goals, we make plans, we take action, and we have positive expectation, absolutely, but we make sure we're not emotionally attached to the results or any one result in particular.
Yeah, I think you just revealed a fantastic highlight there, is that other people are aware of what you're up to, and they may not necessarily communicate that to you. You never know who's watching or who knows who. Mm-hmm. Fascinating. Well, Bob, we've come to an end of this discussion, but I firstly want to say thank you for hopping onto this podcast, talking about the Go-Giver. One last thing, and that is, what would you like our community to do to support you? What would be good for you to receive for coming onto this show?
Well, I mean, I think it's really just a matter of, you know, whoever would like to buy the book and benefit from it. That's, you know, we always enjoy that. And then just go out and apply the principles and touch the people in your life with lots of value, touch the lives of lots of people. And I think if we all do that, we create a world that we all enjoy living in.
And I think it's important we should give this book to our kids, because it's a valuable lesson to get early in life. So thank you very much. You've been listening to Bob Berg. You can go and grab a free chapter of The Go-Giver at thegogiver.com. Thank you so much, Bob.
Oh, thank you, James.
Discover how to build your business
super fast.
Check out superfastbusiness.com.